This is Emotional Connection with Rafael Kushner. It's my personal and professional passion to help people access their emotions directly. This simple but rare process, for those who master it, creates greater wisdom, success, and most of all, well-being. Each week on this podcast, I share a recent session recorded with a client facing a particular challenge. This gives you, the listener, a chance to see the process of emotional connection in an up-close, unedited fashion, applied to practical, everyday concerns. Whenever you get the gist of the issue at hand and want to dive into the process itself, feel free to skip ahead in the podcast. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you so much for joining us. And now, enjoy the podcast. Hello, we are here today with Maureen. Maureen, welcome. It's great to be with you.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Maureen and I know each other a little bit, and Maureen decided to take advantage of these podcast sessions to look at a couple things in her life. And Maureen, what I'd like you to do is just start off with a little kind of a monologue for me about the first issue that we're going to look at. And what I mean by monologue is, if you just feel free to describe whatever comes up for you around your concern. It doesn't have to all fit together or make total sense. But I'll just listen. I'll ask you some questions, and I trust completely that the two of us will land exactly where we need to create the greatest degree of opening and support for you.
Okay. Well, I'm 45 years old, and a year ago I had to leave teaching. I'd been a teacher for 25 years, and I have a neurological condition that I was diagnosed when I was 24, but it's a slowly degenerative disease, and it affects my hands and my feet. It causes muscle neuropathy. Mm-hmm. And so I had to go out on early retirement and am on permanent disability. And I felt like I was part of the decision to say that I needed to leave teaching, but mm-hmm. I felt like it was something that was, it wasn't something I really had control over. And so this last year, I haven't been working, and I've been, very active in my spiritual community, and I've loved having the freedom of being retired. But I'm realizing that I'm getting frustrated with my body not working. And it maybe just is a natural aging process, too. But I my hands don't have the strength anymore to do a lot of things. And so it's frustrating for me not to feel independent, to be able to do everything by myself that I want to do. So that's kind of where I am right now. I don't know what more to say about that or what questions you have about that.
Well, the first thing before I even ask any questions is I just want to ask you, because I know it brings up a lot for you even just to, share that information. So just turn your attention to your body for a moment and notice what you feel, where you feel it. And you don't have to describe it to me right away, but just give yourself a few moments just to notice and hold in a kind of a caring way whatever feelings and sensations are flowing through you in the wake of that sharing. Just see if you can breathe into those sensations and just keep allowing them, as if with your attention you're just saying, it's okay. It's okay. I'm paying really, really close attention to you and just caring.
Well, it feels like my heart hurts, mm-hmm. and I just feel really sad.
Yeah. And is the hurt, is the sadness also in your heart area?
No, the sadness is in my head. Mm-hmm. It's in my mind.
Okay.
The sadness is.
Okay.
The heart, I guess on my heart feels anxious. Mm. And my head feels sad.
Okay. If you had to just tune into both of those and see which one is feels like it's calling your attention more in this moment, or which one is the more powerful experience, is there one that stands out, or are they really?
Yeah, the sadness. The sadness is definitely primary.
Now, when you say that you feel the sadness in your head, where in your head mostly?
Well, I feel just because I'm starting to cry that the leaking from my eyes is where the focus is. But I feel like it's my thoughts that create my sadness. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's go back for a moment just to the tears coming out of your eyes. Can you spend just a moment with me with the idea that if no tears come, that's perfect, and if a river of tears came, that's perfect. But just giving 100% permission for the sadness to emerge and for anything that comes along with the sadness, you know, sensations moving through you, tears coming. Just see if you can just say for these next few moments, well, I don't like this sadness. Usually I kind of push it away, but right now I'm just going to say, I'm here for it, and I'm going to stay connected to it wherever it takes me. For a few moments, see if you can surf the experience of that sadness with your attention.
And just do this internally in silence, or do you want me to describe?
You can first do it. Just begin. Feel free to not look for words even. Just have the experience. And, I'll check in with you in a few moments. But just, you know, give yourself over to the sadness, but stay wide awake.
Okay.
With your awareness as you keep surfing it. And so I'm just going to kind of re-stimulate it for a second, you know, for you. Just this is, you know, you losing control of some of your vital motor functions, having to maybe give up teaching even before it was truly necessary, and just the frustration and this deep sadness that you notice from having to deal with this every minute of every day.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep surfing with your awareness. If you could be curious about the sadness, how it really arises.
Well, I feel guilty. It feels like guilt now. That there's something that I'm not doing right. It's not that I'm making this happen, but There's a sense of failing, that I'm doing something wrong, and that's what's making this, my physical condition.
Mm-hmm. So
I hate to fail.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, and as I ask you some questions, I want to invite you to stay connected to that sadness and the guilt, or both, or whatever it's just to. So see if you can just allow your awareness to include your sensations as well as my words.
Okay.
It sounded like you said two things that were oppositional. The first one was, you know, I don't think it's like I'm doing something to create this, but then it seemed like you were also saying that maybe you felt, at least a part of you felt like it was your fault.
Yeah, I feel responsible for some reason. Mm. Or that it's that I could prevent it, but I can't. I just feel like I want to prevent everything. Mm.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that there's a part of you, and I recognize that it isn't all of you, but that there's a part of you that thinks you should be able to keep this from happening.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, definitely.
And if we gave the full floor for just a few moments to that part of you, and we let, you know, everything it had to say come forward without editing, knowing that you don't have to necessarily agree with all of it. But can you say more about that? You know, why should you be able to prevent this if, as you understand, it's a degenerative neurological condition?
I just feel like that I want to prevent it from happening. I want it to stop. And because I just don't like it. It's not a logical thing that I feel like I can stop it. But it's like I want it to stop so bad so that I can just be normal. And be independent and do all the things that I want to do. And
so it sounds like, as you're describing it, that it isn't so much that it's a kind of a blaming presence, like you really should be able to get rid of this condition, but more it's a powerful wanting, like I really want to be free of these symptoms.
Yeah, I guess that's it. It is just a really strong desire.
Yeah. And when you tap into that desire just in this moment and you use the same practice as before where you just stay wide awake and surf it with your awareness, where is this desire strongest in you, in your body? Where does it live? I want to be better.
In my chest, my heart.
Okay. So see if you can just give a few moments to that, connecting to that, that, you know, even though another part of you may think, you know, that's crazy, I can't change this, but this part of you really, really wants a lot of power for the situation to change. So if you can allow that feeling in your chest and just stay connected to it, however it changes or wherever it moves.
Okay.
Big wanting. This is powerful desire.
Well, the tightness seems just spread out, mm-hmm. and my chest is powerful.
Is what? What's the word you used?
Powerful.
Uh-huh. Okay. So,
but the energy just seemed to disperse, like it was like really, my chest was really tight in the beginning, and then it just kind of dispersed.
Mm-hmm. I see. So there's a release of tension, and then in the release, there's a feeling of power, a strong energy in your chest.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and now it's softening.
Okay. See if you can spend a few moments just being with that powerful energy and the softening and whatever else comes. You know, the first experience we would call a contraction, you know, just the tension of this mm-hmm. wanting and how it, you know, feels within your system. And then as the tension releases, it puts you right in closer touch with that desire. So let yourself be with it for a few more moments.
It's just gone.
And in its place is what?
Just an ease, a relaxation. Mm-hmm. The energy, the intensity of the energy is just kind of gone.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I feel like I can breathe again.
Uh-huh. So this may sound like a strange question, but can you allow that, the ease and the ability to breathe fully? Can you accept that in this moment? Is it okay for you to have that ease?
Yes.
Okay. Good. So there's a complex of experiences that arise in you around your disability. One part of you is, sad to have the experience. Another part of you has a fierce wish, let's say, that the situation could be different. And then somehow in connection to that wish, and maybe somehow to the sadness as well, there's a tension, which I would call a resistance to just the raw experience, the raw reality of the disability as it occurs in this moment. Does that sound right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so, now that you've moved through some of those sensations and emotions, and you hear me kind of summarize what just showed up in a short few minutes, and you stay connected to your body, has the ease remained, that sense of openness, or has something new come up to take its place?
No, the ease is remaining.
Okay.
Yeah, it feels, I just feel more at peace inside, mm-hmm. and kind of built down, and I feel that kind of centered again.
So I'm going to put out an idea, and I want you to just share with me how it sits with you. Do you agree, disagree? Are you conflicted? And notice in particular if what I share with you, has any impact on your body, not just your thoughts. And the idea is this, that whatever power and control you may have over your disability, whatever power and control you may have to become physically as well as possible,
mm-hmm.
is going to be increased or maximized through your acceptance moment by moment of the experience you're having, and is going to be minimized by your resistance to that experience.
Mm.
How does that sit with you?
It sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if it's true, if that really is true. Can I trust that?
Well, just to be clear, I don't know and couldn't know and wouldn't presume how much impact you can consciously have on your condition.
Mm-hmm.
And the statement I was making, now that I've said it, I can kind of put it in, more common language and just say, if you resist it, you can make it worse, for sure. And
uh-huh.
if you accept it, you'll have the greatest opportunity for whatever healing may be present. We don't
yeah.
know what that is, but you'll be creating the best possible internal environment for healing.
Yeah. And I guess the acceptance for me is, part of acceptance for me is accepting that it might not heal, it might not change,
mm-hmm.
and to be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I'd love for it to change, and I would hope for that. And I really want to be, like you said, just in each moment, be in a place of acceptance, because I want to live with ease in this body that I'm in right now, exactly as it is right now. I don't want my energies focused on pushing the river, making something happen, or wishing something that isn't true, or that, I do believe that the best possible healing for me is to be, is to be in acceptance.
Okay.
So that does resonate for me.
Okay. Good. So
yeah,
I want to make something clear also from my perspective that you can want with 100% for your symptoms to go away and for your illness to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And that does not put you in resistance at all. If your wanting is what's real, then it's real. And
okay.
If you are accepting your experience moment by moment, and as you said, accepting whatever may come, a healing, a staying the same, or even a worsening of your symptoms, if you can just accept in this moment the idea that that's not yours to know, that's the future that doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
Then what happens is you don't have to have limited space inside or limited attention for both sides of that equation. The wanting doesn't have to compete with the accepting. Does that make sense?
Okay. I guess that my wanting feels like I'm wanting to push something forward or make something happen. So, but that isn't really what wanting is. It's just a simple pure desire, I guess. So I need to reframe that. That's really helpful for me to reframe that and experience wanting alongside of accepting and not feel like it is resisting.
Right. And another way to refer to that wanting is to say a strong preference.
Okay.
You know, so just to give you an example outside of your own experience, I have lived with a chronic illness for about 20 years, and as you well know, it's a journey. And you know, what I can say to you as a fellow traveler in that journey is that the spiritual work and sort of the razor's edge of that work is exactly what you and I are talking about, to come to a place where, and now just speaking for me personally, I have a strong preference that those symptoms go away and that complete and full physical healing takes place. And I give whatever I can consistently to power that intention and to take action steps that may lead to that, whether it's directly leading to it because I do this or take that supplement or something, or whether it's action steps where I'm doing this and taking that supplement, but somehow it's not those specific things, but my openness and my willingness to stay in alignment with my intention just allows something else that is of a healing nature to come into my field. Either of those is fine with me. You know, so I have that strong preference that I'm in alignment with both in my thoughts and my actions, and at the same time I am completely accepting of the symptoms that I have, and you know, if they never go away, they never go away. And so in this moment my acceptance is complete, with a recognition that I'm not in control of what comes next. I don't have a knowing of what comes next. Mm-hmm. So just to, you know, summarize all that, and coming back to what you said, you know, it's a complete acceptance and a strong preference. And the razor's edge I was describing is how to hold those two things in a way that allows them to be complementary and not in competition with one another.
Yeah, okay. That helps a lot.
And so
I want to hold it.
yeah. And, you know, I know lots of people, you know, through different support groups and such, you know, who have the illness that I have. And what happens with many of them is that when they set out to heal themselves, they end up getting on this very debilitating roller coaster of high hopes and then dashed expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they're not really accepting of their condition. So they want so much, and that wanting has a resistant quality to what's here in the present. And they put their faith in this next new thing that's going to heal them. And then when it doesn't work the way they want to, they fall into a depression because they can't be with the sadness and the upset that comes from realizing, you know, damn, I'm right back here where I started. And with many of those people, they find that they have a limited ability to go on that roller coaster ride, you know, more than, you know, however many times they've already done it, 10, 20, 30. And so they actually give up. You know, they don't do much of anything, and they don't bring power to their intention for healing because it's just too hard, and really their resistance wins out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what we're talking about now, we could even expand beyond the realm of illness and healing, and we could really talk about trying to change any situation. You know, even if it's external, even if it's a, you know, a social situation or political situation, when we approach it with a need for it to be different,
mm-hmm.
and a recognition that we won't be okay if it's not different, if we don't succeed according
mm-hmm.
to our own definition, then there's resistance built into the efforts for change, and therefore the efforts will be seriously hampered, if not even just, you know, squashed completely.
Mm-hmm.
So for maximum change, we require maximum acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else besides acceptance that allows you to feel peaceful with something that you want to change?
Let me think about that question and answer it, you know, in this moment as truthfully as I can. What I would say is that acceptance is the ground. And there are lots of other things that are very helpful that arise once the ground or foundation is in place. So, for instance, once I've accepted my symptoms as they're arising in this moment,
mm-hmm.
I am more present. And in that presence, I experience other things in addition to my symptoms. And I also notice that I have more energy. Even if my mm-hmm. symptoms are depleting, just the acceptance of those symptoms liberates whatever energy is available for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can live and function alongside my symptoms, or work with them to find out exactly what I'm capable of truly moment by moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that those things also really make a big difference. They change the reality of my functioning, but also how I feel, you know, with that functioning, however limited it is.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Okay. Well, that's really helpful for me to hear, because I find myself well, like if my hands aren't working, like I can't button anything anymore, or I can't, you know, do my jewelry, or, you know, my fingers just don't work. And so my frustration, I end up getting angry at my hands. And so, like, working with them and alongside them, you know, in the moment, however they do or don't, you know, function, I guess, is something I want to practice.
Yeah, because you know, yeah. Maureen, it's. I just had another session recently with somebody who has yet another chronic illness, and what we were looking at is how what would cause her to get angry or frustrated, and especially to get down on herself, would
mm-hmm.
be when her current set of expectations about how she should be performing,
mm-hmm.
When those expectations haven't been updated to include her current condition.
Yeah.
In other words, she started seeing, as we were talking about this, that she was, you know, really, she was really feeling like, you know, frustrated, a disappointment to herself. She was feeling like a failure because how her body was functioning today is different from how it was functioning, you know, 10 years ago. But 10 years ago, she didn't have the illness.
Mm-hmm.
So she really was arguing with what is. And it was making her really angry. And so to work alongside, you know, as we're both discussing, is to say, this is what is right now in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to bring, you know, resistance based on the fact that either it used to be different or some part of me thinks it should be different. I'm going to say, okay, well, here it is. This is what my hands can do right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe even that acceptance, to stick with, you know, my earlier example, brings a little extra mobility because there's no fight in the moment. But,
yeah.
But maybe it doesn't, and then you're freed to bring creative energy to how you want to handle this aspect of your life. You know, what you want to do in regards to buttons and jewelry. And
mm-hmm.
I don't have that particular issue. I can't speak to all the different creative ways that a person could handle it. But what I know is that if I had that problem and I was, you know, angry for having it and resistant about it, my system is not going to sweetly and creatively in alignment with spirit, you know, bring forth all of the opportunities for how to make the best of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just noticed this morning when I was trying to button and my husband said, oh, well, I'll help you. And I just, you know, that's a helpful solution. You know, he could help. I mean, and he does often. I guess it's my resistance to accepting help or, you know, I'm just not receptive to anything other than me doing everything all by myself.
Right. So the what you find there is, see, we talk about illness as always having all kinds of healing opportunities for us, whether or not the symptoms get better. And mm-hmm. what we mean by that is here you notice your internal relationship to dependency, to
mm-hmm.
not being able to control your body and your environment as completely as you're used to. So really, if we, again, use the healing perspective, we can say, you know, rather than cursing those buttons that you can't button anymore, you could look forward to each day's moments of buttoning and unbuttoning because it gives you an opportunity to be with everything that arises around having to ask for that help.
Yeah.
And to open to whatever places of dependency or chaos or whatever else is there, you may have habitually been resisting. Reason being, the more you open, the more present you are, the more you heal, the more joy you have. So
mm-hmm.
you could look forward to those damn buttons because your willingness to be present in those moments has enormous healing capacity for you. As a matter of fact, what you hate experiencing the most is always going to be your greatest healer if you bring your caring attention there and stay
mm-hmm.
attuned to all of the sensations and feelings that arise during that very experience.
Okay. And is it important to, really feel all your feelings fully? Like, allow them to move through me? Or just being with whatever is. So if I'm restricting or constricting, and when I'm getting angry with myself, then I'm just with that, right? There isn't
right,
any,
well,
is there a goal to move through it, or
well,
it just happens?
If there is a goal, the goal is just to facilitate and deepen your presence. And
okay.
So when you notice that you're resisting and the, you know, the tension is showing up in your body or in your negative thoughts that are arising,
uh-huh.
this is like a neon arrow saying, begin acceptance here.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is that you don't want to bring resistance to your resistance because that just creates more resistance.
Yeah.
So if your intention is to accept all the flow of sensation and feeling that move through you during this difficult episode, and you notice that really the opposite is happening, you're frustrated and you're uptight, you know, then you want to say, okay, well, where do I feel that in my body? Where can I open to that tightness and frustration and allow that completely, because that is what's here right now. You can't make a bypass around your resistance to become more present and accepting. You have to go through it. But the good news is that all resistance unravels and releases just with the compassionate and spacious placing of your attention right where it is.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen that not happen.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes a minute. Sometimes it takes 5 minutes. But it always happens. And then you're in touch. And then it's an effortless process to let those feelings flow through you,
mm-hmm.
because they just do. And then when you become more open and expanded in their presence, sometimes if there's a backlog of feelings from, you know, the past, those come through too. But every time you stay connected to them, there is a healing that happens. And you find that ultimately sometimes when you stay present, the feelings go away completely. Other times they remain, but you're wide open and expansive and feel joyful, whatever else you're also feeling. So sometimes I'll feel joyful and sad in the same moment because I'm fully present and I can embrace sadness just mm-hmm. like I can embrace any of the other so-called more positive aspects of life. So the goal really is to feel everything and accept everything, and the benefit in doing that is that you connect with yourself, you create healing, and you ultimately create peace.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh. Well, that's very helpful.
And I want to draw your attention to one other thing that may also be helpful. When you eat your food each day,
mm-hmm.
and your food gets digested and turned into energy,
mm-hmm.
how do you do that? How do you make that happen? Like what chemicals?
How do I make that happen?
What chemicals and enzymes and physical functions do you choose to put into place when it's time for digesting? Consciously.
I have no idea.
Right.
Because it's been a really long time since, you know, sophomore year biology.
Oh, yes, but let's put it this. When you were in biology and when you were acing your exams, did that put you in any more conscious control of the process?
No.
So would it be fair to say that you have never been consciously in control of the process of turning food into energy in your body?
No. That would be true.
Okay. So this you, who we'll call conscious Maureen, who makes choices in her life and, you know, deals with what arises, you know, moment by moment, she's actually wildly out of control of her very physical survival
mm-hmm.
on a moment by moment, daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, lifetime basis.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm drawing your attention to is that for those of us, you know, and I would include myself right there along with you, who really get a lot out of being able to control their environment, feel, you know, empowered and safe when they can control their environment and be as independent and,
mm-hmm.
you know, as strong-willed as they can, we're all just making it up.
Yeah.
It's just an illusion that we enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So when you... I want you to move through your resistance and to feel all the feelings of, you know, powerlessness, helplessness, whatever else might come up for you, you know, mm-hmm. when it's, you know, buttoning time and you have to ask for help. I'm not wanting to, you know, mitigate all of that. But on the other hand,
to ask your husband for help is to bring into your conscious awareness a dependency that is fully functioning all the time on an unconscious level within you.
Yeah, I guess so. I've just never looked at it that way. Yeah.
And so I just thought maybe perhaps, you know, it would be helpful to notice that all of us walk through the day functioning by the grace of mechanisms that we really don't know anything about. And we try sometimes to assist, you know, we'll take a green tea extract or a vitamin C or, you know, a shot or, you know, we'll try to use our conscious mind and everything that we have at our disposal to assist in the process. But the core of the process is something that happens all on its own.
Yeah.
And sometimes the more attention we put on it, the more we try to, you know, fix the problem, the worse it gets, which just reminds us that it really is autonomic.
Mm-hmm.
It's designed for us not to be in control of.
Yeah.
And so just if we take this realization one step further, a body, a person, is in the greatest degree of harmony when their conscious choices are synergistic with their unconscious processes. So what I mean is, if I'm aware of what makes me feel good, what is the most nutritious for me, then I'm going to assist my body in digesting my food and turning it into energy. So if we then take this metaphor over to what we were talking about in terms of your hands and buttoning, you're going to be the most harmonious when you recognize in this moment what limitation is real and how you can best address that so that you can function as fully and successfully as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which may just turn into, honey, could you button these buttons for me?
Yeah.
And then he does, and then they're buttoned, and you can now go about the business of your day.
Mm-hmm.
So where can I assist myself? Once I accept what's true and real here for just this moment, how can I assist myself in making what needs to happen as smoothly as possible?
Yeah. Okay, can you take that a little bit further and expand in terms of overeating? Is there time for that?
Sure. It's a big topic that has a lot that is specific to it, but everything that we've been talking about applies.
Okay.
So, first of all, from my experience, almost always compulsion when brought to eating is a continuous decision not to be present. So,
okay.
Let's use that as a foundation or even just as a kind of a provocation. And let me ask you to describe what you mean by emotional overeating, because I don't think you said that right here, but before the recording began, that's what you called it.
Yeah, I feel like I don't eat for nutritional reasons. I mean, I don't eat to fuel my body to go about my day, which is how, like, my husband describes, you know, he eats just to get energy in his body. It doesn't have any other meaning to him, really. And he doesn't really have any weight issues. He's very fit. And so I feel like I'm different in that way, in that I don't have to make myself eat to give myself energy. I'm constantly interested and driven in tasting lots of different kinds of things. Like, I'm kind of attached to gourmet foods, and so I just find myself getting caught up in these cycles where I want to taste all these different things, And I, but they're very rich. They're very high calorie. They're, you know, and so it's not a balanced, it's not a balanced meal or eating.
Well, I can tell you.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, you go ahead. You finish.
Well, and so I just feel like I eat totally differently than, you know, most people or, you know, I just, and it's not working for my body. I mean, I'm slowly gaining weight and I'm not able to like get that turned around by getting other habits in place. It's like I'm not disciplined enough to eat, you know, fruits and vegetables. I want to have, you know, goat cheese and brie and red wine and chocolate. And, you know, I'm just kind of, I am having a really hard time letting go of that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I actually can promise you that whatever weight issues that you have aren't due to your desire, your hunger for taste, for lovely, sensual experiences of taste. That's not the issue.
Okay.
I can promise you that you could spend the rest of your life allowing yourself to enjoy that beautiful aspect of living,
mm-hmm.
and not have it be a detriment to you.
Okay.
And here's why I can promise that. What happens for most of us is that we make the decision, you know, let's say, you know, to go for the brie instead of the, you know, the fresh fruit. And we take that first bite and we go on to a kind of an automatic pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And when I said before that the compulsion is about a decision not to be present, sometimes we even go on automatic pilot, and even though we love that brie so much, in the 5 minutes that it takes to eat whatever we've eaten, when it's done, we look back and we didn't even really pay that much attention to what we were doing. We might have even looked forward to the brie for hours, but then the experience of the brie is kind of only, you know, half satisfactory or less because we weren't even there for so much of it.
Mm-hmm.
And by contrast, if it's true what you're saying, that it's the taste that drives you, and if you're not eating to stuff emotion,
mm-hmm.
then you can say to yourself, I love this taste, and I can have one taste.
Mm-hmm.
So someone else might have just the apple and the pear for their, you know, fruit snack. I'm going to have one, or you can even say two or three small bites, and I'm going to be so present with each bite that I'm going to draw the maximum amount of pleasure from each bite. I'm going to go slowly. I'm going to roll it around on my tongue. I'm going to let the scent of it fill me up. Sometimes, and I'm not suggesting that you have to do this, but sometimes when I do that, I literally can't sit still and I can't stay quiet. So, you know, I'm eating this lovely bite of something like you said, goat cheese, which is something I love. And so I'll literally just be like, this tastes so good. And I'll be noticing that I'm kind of squirming with pleasure and delight. And
mm-hmm.
to be completely honest with you, if I did that for one or two or, like I say, even three small bites, I also notice I'm not in the more, more, and more, have to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
I'm usually sated because I've had the fullness of the taste.
Okay. Well,
how does that look? Well, it's just, and so tell me how it goes for you ordinarily.
Just what you described, you know, I look forward to it all day long and I do enjoy the first bite, and after that I go unconscious and, you know, a whole wedge of brie is gone and I don't even remember eating it.
Okay.
Or, you know, I mean, it's just very definitely that.
Right. So that really is, you know, that, like you said, it's eating and not being there during the process. And I like how you said I'd like to practice that. And on the practical level, I can just share with you that the easiest way to practice that
mm-hmm.
is to decide before what the portion is.
Okay, yeah.
And to put away the rest of it.
Okay.
And so if I know I have this small wedge of chocolate, and it looks to me like there's two bites in there, then I already know that whatever pleasure I'm going to get from this experience is going to be in those two bites. And so I'm going to go for it. I'm going to stay awake through that whole process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I, first of all, if I notice when I'm taking, when I sliced off that piece of the chocolate, a twinge,
oh,
like I know I'm being denied more.
Mm-hmm.
Or if when I'm done, I start to feel like, oh, why did it only have to be that? Then I know
okay.
It's not just about the taste. That there's some need in me that is frustrated with my not having enough. And
mm-hmm.
then I turn my attention to my body, and I do exactly what you were doing earlier in our call. And just
okay.
to be specific, what I mean is this, that when you create some space between that, oh, that yearning and the actual either deciding, yes, it's okay, I'm going to have another four bites, or I'm not going to have them now, but I'm going to have them later, and so the decision's made, and so that part of you can relax because there might be a little delayed gratification, but at least there's going to be gratification. Instead of any of that, you create what I like to call done deal delay. It's not a done deal, right? You give yourself some space. I felt that, oh, I want more, and now you say, okay, maybe. But for the next little while, could be 30 seconds, could be a couple minutes, I'm just going to stay with what arises in the space of choosing to explore rather than go forward. I'm going to,
okay.
in other words, see what is within that compulsive urge just by
okay.
turning my attention to its physical nature and letting it take me to the heart of the matter. So that urge, that no, that's a contraction.
Mm-hmm.
So if I accept that and I stay connected to it with my attention, it will release and it will put me in touch with maybe longing or sadness or a feeling of deprivation. I don't get enough. I don't have enough. And so if I can be with that feeling of not having enough, the presence at that level leads to the kind of ease and release that you had earlier when we were dealing with the feelings of sadness and guilt
mm-hmm.
and whatever else was arising in your chest. In other words, it's a more satisfying response to the feeling of deprivation. It
mm-hmm.
often heals a lot of old deprivation that's been pushed away or stuffed down. And it doesn't have the repercussion of, in this case, the weight gain.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to
okay.
give yourself some moments of that done deal delay in order to be able to allow it to arrive. If you just go for the next bite or you know, just override the first portion, then you stuff it back down.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that'll be an interesting process. I will.
And then, Maureen, when you can't do that, you know, like when you just say screw it,
mm-hmm.
rather than that being a failure, that's a
mm-hmm.
really important opportunity. What was it right there? What came up that I can be more sensitized to the next time, and maybe really connect with? So in other words, what we might ordinarily call a failure actually is the provider of crucial information
mm-hmm.
on the journey.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I'd like to look at it that way. I'd like to be able to kind of be open to investigating that.
Mm-hmm.
instead of just going right to the failure.
And so just you know, again, by way of a quick personal example, sometimes I'll use food as a reward. You know, and this comes back to the whole chronic illness piece. Sometimes I'll have a really hard day with my symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll think, wow, I've had to be with a lot, and it's taken a lot out of me, and I feel kind of spent. And I also feel kind of, you know, a little victim-y, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I will look at some kind of food that I enjoy, and I will have it and just say, you know, here's one thing that you're just not going to control and that you're not going to discipline yourself about. This is your present.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I'm in acceptance of that,
mm-hmm.
and I stay present, fine. I'll have as many bites as I need to get the most out of the gift. And probably I won't really do, you know, any harm to my body, weight gain or otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm wanting to share with you is that even when I choose to use food as a reward, if I do it with presence, it's a positive, and it
mm-hmm.
only becomes a negative if I go to sleep, you know,
yeah.
while it's happening.
Okay. Wow. It's amazing how much being awake can serve me. And, you know, it's interesting that as humans, that it's not, I mean, I think it's our nature to be awake, but, gosh, we're just crafty at ways of going to sleep. And
yeah.
So many ways, you know, I'm mm-hmm. yeah, interesting.
And,
but,
you know, there's so much to that, and I wouldn't want to oversimplify it, but there is one aspect of it that feels pretty universal to me, and I'll just share it with you as a kind of a parting comment.
Mm-hmm.
What I've noticed is that the primitive survival function of our brain, the part that really only has two settings, safe and danger,
mm-hmm.
as vital as it is to our survival and as much as we need it to work in harmony with the rest of our mental functioning, it has one really big law that evolution hasn't quite worked out yet for us. And that is that it can't tell the difference between an external threat like a saber-toothed tiger
mm-hmm.
and an internal threat like a challenging emotion such
mm-hmm.
as sadness or frustration or longing or jealousy or grief. And so our brain literally responds to those emotions the same way it does to the saber-toothed tiger, or did.
Mm-hmm.
And going to sleep, the vast majority of the time, is actually a protective mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps mm-hmm. us from feeling what our system has deemed is, you know, too much or too painful for us to feel. And in some important instances, that's a correct determination, especially when we're young and we're going through trauma, and that's the only way we can, you know, have our fragile systems make it through.
Mm-hmm.
But we go on with that habit into adulthood, and it really is, as I say, the most common reason that we sleep through life.
Mm-hmm.
And once we get that, and once we get to the place where we can say bravely and forcefully, I will feel everything because I understand that emotions are just part of my overall feedback system. They're a part of life, and actually they're what help me feel the most alive.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I say, I'm going to welcome and be with and really take the most I can from my emotional flow. When we get to that place, we can't help but wake up. And without making that decision on a conscious level and then practicing the awareness that brings it into being, we're not able to stay awake. But once we do those things I just mentioned, then it's impossible for us to go back to sleep for more than short periods of time when we're triggered. And then when we're triggered, it's so painful because we can see so much more clearly before how different it is to be asleep than awake.
Mm-hmm.
That we have every desire to wake up or to reawaken as
mm-hmm.
soon and as fully as possible.
Oh, well, that's something I'll look forward to.
Yeah, and I hope that you will keep me posted, and, you know, both when there are those times that, you know, it's not a failure, but there's more information, you
mm-hmm.
keep in touch about that. Also, you know, when you start to recognize, wow, I am more and more wide awake, and it is my new set point, I'd love to hear
mm-hmm.
about that. But maybe even more important than those other two, if you ever get to a place where you feel like, help, it's not working,
mm-hmm.
you know, somehow I'm not staying awake, or somehow I can't be with this particular thing that arises or break through this particular habit, those are the times when the wisest person knows I need support.
Mm-hmm.
And just like you can't digest your own food, you also can't move through all of this without support. And
yeah, it's really helpful for me to have it facilitated for me, because
yeah.
I don't know where to go sometimes,
yeah.
just if I'm by myself.
Yeah, and so the recognition, oh, it's time to email Raphael, you know, and get back in touch, or whoever else makes up your support network, that can sometimes be the most instrumental part of the process. It's the gift that you give to yourself. And that's why when people come to, you know, the workshops that I hold, or when they set up the phone sessions that I have, I'm
mm-hmm.
always inspired by them and so appreciative, not with anything having to do for me personally, but with the model that they set of really being willing to invest in oneself care,
mm-hmm.
you know, taking that step. There's so many people who are walking around so defended about being able to seek support that I'm always just, you know, really humbled and so grateful for all the people who are ready to say, no, I'm not meant to do it all alone. This
mm-hmm.
is a strength that I will be vulnerable enough to try to learn a new way and get support
yeah.
for that.
Yeah, it definitely takes vulnerability, being willing to do this kind of work.
Yeah, and you know, it really is through that vulnerability that we become the most powerful, paradoxical
yeah.
though it is.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's my edge, but I'm always grateful when I go there.
Yeah.
So,
well, listen, thank you so much. It's been great traveling with you, and I can really feel your openness to the process, and so I know that you'll start experiencing some of these benefits, you know, well, that
yeah,
you
this
have
is,
and that you will continue to, you know, throughout even just today.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's definitely woken me up on a new level, so I'm looking forward to practicing. Yeah, thanks.
You've been listening to Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. Our theme music is by Stephen Walters. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you for joining us, and here's to emotional connection.